life.
A podcast of the cinema.
Who are you, anyway?
am I my resume? I'm Alonzo Duraldi.
What?
From A Chorus Line.
Oh, okay.
You are Dave White.
Yeah.
We are film critics.
And I am stuck. My laptop is stuck on Amy Grant's Wikipedia page.
Like you don't live there. Like you haven't put down a cot.
I had to look up some very
important... And a little table on Amy Grant's Wikipedia.
I had to look up some very important information about Amy Grant.
Your computer's like, look, you could leave, but we're just going to come back here anyway. So how about if we just stay? I'll just keep this page locked open for you because we all know you're coming back.
I'm going to have to shut down... I'm going to have to restart my whole computer.
Okay, well, you do that.
Do I command... What is it?
Love will find a way.
Option something, command escape. Yeah.
You could do that. Or
that's. I got to force quit.
Yeah, just to hold...
Nothing down. Wants to close.
Yeah.
Baby.
Every heartbeat belongs to you.
Well, if I can restart my computer... And and get back up into my email where the letter that we're going to read later in the show lives, and everything goes well, I'll sing my praise to the Lord.
Oh, I knew we were getting there the long way around. This is not a podcast about Amy Grant.
It could be, though. I know a lot.
It would have a lot of information. It would be a monologue, because I know very little about Amy Grant. Despite our close personal connection.
I have so much information. Yeah, here you are only one degree separated from her.
One-ish.
In a very real way that Amy Grant doesn't remember.
I'm sure she does not. Amy Grant went to Vanderbilt. And
so did your sister.
So did my older sister.
And they joined the same sorority.
And yes, and Amy Grant was my older sister's quote-unquote big sister.
In the sorority. But she was never around.
Yeah.
Because she was always on tour.
Pretty much. And she wound up leaving college with like a semester to go. She was like, I got a career. Screw this.
I got a career.
I don't need an English degree.
I already have 3 Grammy Awards. What do I need this for?
Life is waiting to be lived.
Yeah. What is... Why is this...
It's a weird day.
Please pause the recording, because I'm having a real computer problem right now.
All right, we'll be right back. Okay.
I fixed it.
Johnny Lee Miller over here.
I fixed it.
Of the film Hackers.
I'm a hacker.
Has figured out how to restart his laptop.
I'm a hacker from the movie Hackers.
Because you're deep into the dark web. Today's a weird day. It's my birthday.
It's your birthday.
And
Happy birthday.
It's a weird day. Thank you.
It's your birthday. You're 54 years old today. I'm very excited about that.
Fresh-faced 54.
You haven't really had a chance to super celebrate your birthday today, though.
Well, you know, it's funny. In years past, it has been periodic in my adult life as a film critic that on the night of my birthday, I would have to go review some movie.
Pretty much. That's always how it works.
You know, and then weirdly,
we rarely celebrate your birthday on the day.
And then sometimes it turns out that we just wind up going to the movies on my birthday because it's some one night repertory or art house thing and it's the only time to go see it.
Right.
But I figured out a combo that's even worse, and that's what happened to me this year.
It was a thing that happened yesterday that affected you today.
Yes.
Please explain every detail about it.
Oh, happily.
Because the people have a right to know.
So yesterday, May 17th, I have 2 press screenings. Mind you, these are the first times I have attended a theatrical film screening.
When was the last time?
March 5th, 2020. Okay. I went to see First Cow at the Arclight. R.I.P. Well, for now,
is it really R.I.P'd or is it
maybe it's in the
middle of changing hands?
It's in a coma and it's going to come back. I hope. Anyway, so yesterday I have 2 screenings to go to,
back to back,
and mind you, not just for like, you know, little art house indies that, you know, can be dealt with later in the week or whatever. Oh, no.
The floodgates have opened.
We are back with a bang. So yesterday at 2 o'clock, I see A Quiet Place Part 2.
Yeah.
And then at another theater at 6 o'clock, I see F9. So we're like literally off to the races. And then I have to rush home after the F9 screening and have a review posted by midnight, because that's when the embargo lifted. Yes, F9 does not open in the United States until late June, but it opens this weekend in China and Russia and Hong Kong and various other territories. So it's like, got to get that review out.
Oh, wait. It's opening all around the world before it comes to us?
Pretty much. I mean, the weekend we get it, it opens in a lot of Europe, but it's
Lisa Stansfield gets to see this film before I do.
So I had to do that. Then I had to get up early this morning because the Quiet Place Part 2 review had to be up by 8 a.m.
Yeah.
So given that I had my first, terrible meal out, followed by junky theater food, because I've missed all this stuff.
I need the details. Where'd you go? What happened? Where were you?
So I saw Quiet Place Part 2 at the AMC Century City, where the concession stands were closed.
What?
There was nothing to be had, because they wanted to be really strict about us having our masks on. So nothing.
Is the theater itself open for other screenings?
I don't think it was.
Oh.
I don't think it's open yet. I think
they were already open.
Well, the AMC Burbank, where I went to see F9, was, and their concession stand was open.
Okay.
And I got very good at putting the straw under my N95 mask.
Yeah.
So I was, I was following the rules. But anyway, so I go out to Burbank and...
We are both fully vaccinated.
Yes.
Fully vaccinated at this point, so...
Plus 2 weeks, the whole thing.
You were fine.
So I was really craving Buffalo Wild Wings.
Who isn't craving Buffalo Wild Wings?
I know. They're terrible. I don't care.
They are terrible, but you know what I like about them? Everything. I like going in there and everybody watching sports.
Oh, yeah. So much sports.
3, 4, 5 different sports happening on 25 different TVs, mm-hmm. all at the same time.
Yes.
So it's this loud, loud, loud cacophony. Now, I dislike that in almost every other circumstance of life because I can't hear anything. But when I go to Buffalo Wild Wings, it's always before a movie at the AMC Burbank 16.
Right.
And I'm usually only with you. And you and I talk all the live long day. Anyway, so we both sit there quietly without speaking because we can't hear each other anyway.
Enjoy the din.
Mozzarella sticks. And a soda.
Now you put
money in the jukebox so that everyone has to listen to the Spice Girls and Carly Rae Jepsen while that's going down.
I did that once.
And then we get to have them wings that are
they're
delicious.
Yeah, they are. You're kind of underselling the cacophony, because not only are there five different athletic events going on the various large screen televisions, they are also blasting out a very Buffalo Wild Wings kind of soundtrack. I heard tub thumping.
Yeah, of course.
I heard...
Yeah, that's why you got to get in there and fix it.
I heard John Mayer's Bigger Than My Body.
All right.
A song I forgot existed until it came on. And then I found myself mouthing the words to it.
Until John Mayer is mentioned, I forget John Mayer exists.
Right? I know the feeling. Anyway, so I had ordered... I was going to do a couple of small orders of wings in two different flavors.
Right.
I got the adobo and the chipotle barbecue, in case you're wondering. The waiter, of course, then lets me know that it's actually happy hour and it's cheaper if I get 15 wings.
So you went for it.
He brings me 15 wings.
All right.
I ate 15 wings.
Okay.
Then I go up to the theater.
How did you feel about yourself after that?
Sated.
Okay.
And then I get to the theater and it's like, oh. You know, I really want a Twizzlers and a soda. And so I had that too. And then I come
home. Meanwhile, your body.
Yeah, my body's been eating broccoli.
You have been the perfect novice vegetarian for 14 months.
Yeah.
And I don't know what your body was thinking last night. But you just put all that stuff into it.
Yeah, it was whoa. So I do the get the review written by midnight, and then I go to bed, and I keep waking up really thirsty. Yeah, well, like, I have consumed so much salt.
Reason for that, yeah.
That I have to keep getting up to get water. I can't. I have a hard time getting comfortable. I don't sleep well. So I get up at 6 this morning to write Quiet Place Part 2.
Right.
And then the whole day has just been...
You've been in the twilight fog.
Yes. Yeah. Because I had to drink, like, coffee to get myself awake enough to write the review this morning, which was just enough coffee to keep me from being able to, like, go back to bed as soon as it was over.
Right. So, all right. Well, you know, you're going to have a really nice night of sleep tonight.
I hope so.
You will. Because I'm making, you know, I baked you a cake.
Yes, thank you.
And the dinner is going to be nice because it's the spinach lasagna. And what's not, what, you're going to be comforted right into the pillow.
Okay.
You blow out your candle. You won't need to wish for anything because all your dreams have come true. Thanks to me.
Because I ate a Buffalo Wild Wings.
I meant before that.
Oh, yeah, right. Yes, of course. That too, naturally.
I have yet to be inside a movie theater. Mm. These screenings were for you.
Yes, and they were only for press.
Right.
We had to wear masks.
I mean, I could have gone with you as press.
Yes.
But I was like, you know what I really want? What I really, really want? My first entire day of solitude. Mm. Alone.
In the apartment.
It's not the same thing. When I get up at 5 and you get up at 7 and I go to bed at 9 and you go to bed at 11, mm-hmm. It's not the same thing. That's not solitude because you're still having to be aware of your actions and your noises and your, you know.
Or tiptoeing around to not wake the other one up.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I'm certainly not at 5 o'clock in my 2 hours of, you know, quiet. I'm not getting in the kitchen to do dishes and blast, you know,
John Mayer.
Right. John Mayer. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's the other thing. I've spent 14 months listening to all the genres of music that you cannot abide on headphones.
Yes.
And yesterday I was able to get in the kitchen and cook spaghetti sauce and listen to Sonic Youth on the tape player.
Oh, how nice.
My little cassette player. So I...
you got to crank up some Rabid Sputum while I was out.
Yes, Rabid Sputum. Mm. Is a... You know what? That's probably a name of an actual band.
I bet you it probably is.
Yeah.
All the good ones have been taken.
So you did a thing that you hadn't done in 14 months, and I did a thing that I haven't done in 14 months, and I felt very nice. Like, I remembered how much I want alone time.
Mm.
In spite of the fact that being here for 14 months, day in, day out, every moment of the day with you has been lovely.
Well, thank you. Yes.
Couples, don't just take a road trip together. Get stuck in an apartment during a pandemic.
That's your real test.
Then you'll know. You will know.
So yeah, so it was the press screenings were, it was all press and it was a 25% capacity. You had to sit with 2 empty seats between you and the next person.
Even if you came with someone?
I saw one couple sit together, but pretty much everybody else, that's what they did. So like, it was great to see Matt and Christy.
But then you separated.
But then we sat in the same row, but like, you know, with gaps.
Oh, y'all posted your little huggy pictures on Instagram. No, I saw that.
Well, you know, it's weird because like I've seen them every week.
Here's my strategy.
But I haven't been near them.
Stay away from movie theaters and press screenings long enough so that everyone else gets all the hugs out of their system.
Gotcha.
And they maybe think they already hugged me. So that I can still be all like, don't touch me.
The hugs were nice.
Yeah.
And it's funny because like we were, even though like these are all people I know, professional colleagues and friends or whatever, we were all like, and you know, everybody sort of felt the need to ask first. I'm like, oh, of course not. And then you
did know, I like, hug you before the pandemic? No? Why ruin a good thing now?
You know what?
Yeah.
I don't think I ever hugged Leonard Maltin before, But by gosh, I hugged Leonard Maltin yesterday.
I've hugged Alice.
Well, sure.
That's Leonard's wife.
Wife, yes.
I've hugged Alice.
And Jesse.
And I've hugged Jesse. That's Leonard Maltin's daughter.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever hugged Leonard. Well, I've hugged Alice and Jesse.
I recommend it.
Is Leonard a good hugger?
He is a good hugger.
He's a good hugger? Okay. Yeah. Well, he's very nice. It makes sense that he would be a good hugger.
Of course. His cup runneth over with warmth.
I'm underselling how nice Leonard Maltin is. I don't think there is a...
He's
now that
maybe
we,
the nicest person we've ever met.
Now that we don't have Mr. Rogers anymore,
yeah.
I think we've got Leonard.
He is such a sweetie.
So, yeah, I'm waiting for everyone to get all the hugs out. Right. And then, you know.
We've just scratched the surface here.
I might keep wearing the mask and like some sunglasses.
Start bringing the pool noodle and keeping people at 6 feet.
Stop. Stop it. Get away. No, I don't. It's not because I'm worried about a virus.
No, I know.
I just don't like.
You're a mean one, Mr. No,
I just don't like too much public display, you know.
We've been through a thing, Dave White. Would you tell that sailor and that nurse who kissed in Times Square at the end of World War II?
I would tell them to knock it
off. Hey, get a room.
You know why? I would tell them to knock it off. Do you know the story?
He just
grabbed her. Yeah. She had no idea who he was.
Yeah.
She was not into it. People look at that picture and they're like, oh, that's so celebratory and joyous. And she's like, who is this guy? Get him off of me. Like, that's literally the story of that picture.
Great. Way to ruin it.
Thanks. You're welcome, everyone.
Brought to you by consent.
That's history. It's true. That's true.
What? Then just tell people you don't consent.
No, I don't. Stop looking at me. I don't consent. We have two films to discuss this week.
Yes.
Two. Count them. Two.
Now, I want to just throw out real quick a couple of other films that are out in the world that we will be getting to.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of a new Danish film starring Mads Mikkelsen called Riders of Justice. Mm-hmm. I talk about it in detail with Christy and Matt on Breakfast All Day, if you want to find out about that. But I recommend it. It is in theaters in about like 8 cities right now. Like, it's not just New York and L.A. and the Bay Area, but also like Orlando and Fort Worth.
You actually left me the link to watch the press screener that they the streaming screener.
Yes,
you left me the link, and when I tried to click on it, I got a notice that said, "This has already been viewed on someone else's computer. If you would like your own link, please email blah 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 blah." And I'm like,
"Well, you could have emailed."
Fine. No, because then I would have to explain everything.
Oh, and then they might want a hug later.
Then they might want a hug later. And maybe you would get in like trouble. I don't know.
No.
Like, okay, it's not working.
Fine. So we're going to get to that one. We're going to get to Together Together.
Together Together just started streaming. Yes. So I'm going to watch that this week.
Yes.
You
can read my review of The Wrap in the meantime.
About Endlessness.
Which I still haven't seen either.
Black Bear. The new Aubrey Plaza.
That's not new.
It's been out for a couple weeks.
It's been out for a couple. That was in awards contention.
Was it?
Yeah, that's been floating around for months.
Why did I just hear about it like 2 weeks ago? Like it was new.
I don't know.
Okay, well, this is my bubble at work.
Also, we need to watch The Disciple on Netflix, which everybody says is amazing.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if we'll get to it, but there's a Mexican gay film with 41 in the title that I can't remember what it's called ever, but I hear good things about that one too.
All right. I'm ready for everything. But I'm now ready to discuss Those Who Wish Me Dead.
Mm.
From Jim
Taylor.
Taylor
Sheridan.
Not to be confused with Jim Sheridan. They are very different filmmakers. So it stars Angelina Jolie.
Yes.
And John Bernthal.
Mm-hmm.
A kid named Finn Little.
Yes.
And so here's what it's about. Angelina Jolie is a firefighter. She's a one of those roughnecks. She's out in the woods combating forest fires with hard drinking, hard living, you know,
flame jumpers,
bearded
smoke jumpers,
bearded, you know, alpha men.
Yes.
Okay. She too is a she's got her own flask. At one point in the film, someone refers to her as skinny, and she says, "Lean." I'm lean. And any thoughts you had about, she ain't no firefighter, evaporate.
Well, speak for yourself. April Wolf had some very funny tweets about how I've met women who are smoke jumpers and none of them, you know.
Well, you know what? There's...
none of them had a lip.
If you... I believe that Angelina Jolie could be a firefighter because she seems like she's made of cast iron.
Well,
underneath... all that, like, glamour lady.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
yeah,
thing.
No, there, she does not lack for determination. I think we can all agree. I have a filter with that kind of thing that I think I'm stuck with because I've just watched too many 40s movies.
Right.
Where it's like, remember in Unzipped when Isaac Mizrahi is going off on how in Call of the Wild when they rescue Loretta Young from the tundra and she supposedly got frostbite and they lift up the hood of her anorak and she's got like the perfect eyelashes and the perfect makeup. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's that. Thank you, movie. I will accept this. So unless it's really egregious, I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I look, and for 5 seconds, I think, could this really be? And then I think, sure, it could.
You know, if Charlize Theron wants to go full bore into Eileen Wuornos, great. But I'll also accept Jean Smart in the TV movie with, you know, without the, you know, the same thing. Yeah, so
prosthetics
I just,
and all that.
Exactly.
Stuff.
I'm like, all right, fine.
So she's a disturbed person, though. She's very upset about her life because she had a tragedy take place in a fire, and she was unable to save some kids in a fire. Meanwhile, now this is what, Colorado?
Montana.
A place with trees.
I looked it up because there's a sign at one point where it says Soda Butte. And so I Googled it and it is in Montana.
Okay. And meanwhile, in Florida.
Yes.
There is a forensic accountant who has uncovered some destructive criminal information about some high up ranking people. And because he has uncovered this stuff, he is a target.
A pair of hitmen like blow up a DA's house.
Yeah.
And he and the forensic accountant hears about it on the news and realizes he's next.
Yeah. So he takes his son, he gets in the car, and they start driving.
Yeah.
But the hitmen catch up with them. And then the child is left abandoned in the woods.
Yes.
In Montana. And then a fire happens. And the hitmen are coming. And so it's all this stuff at once.
It's like, have you ever seen the Daffy Duck cartoon, The Scarlet Pumpernickel?
Probably, yes.
Where he's like, the premise is that Daffy is pitching this story at, like, to a Hollywood studio exec. Mm-hmm. And at the end, he's like, and then the dam burst. And then there was pestilence. Like, just adding all this stuff. That's kind of this movie.
Yeah. And then you've got John Bernthal, who's a sheriff, and he is the ex-boyfriend of Angelina Jolie, but now he's married to another woman whose name, the actress, I can't remember her name.
She is, I'm her new biggest fan, Medina Senghor.
Spell the last name?
S-E-N-G-H-O-R-E.
I'll tell you something. I don't know her, but I do now. And I don't want to give away anything. But she deals with these hitmen in a very wonderful way.
If you think,
and then she deals with some other people in very wonderful ways.
Yeah. If you think sheriff's pregnant wife is going to be a victim-y role, mm-mm.
So you've got like three different horrifying things taking place and three different groups of people all running around in the woods.
Yeah. The hitmen, by the way, are played by Aidan Gillen and Nicholas Holt, and their evil, evil, big, bad boss is Tyler Perry.
Tyler Perry shows up for one scene, which is becoming a trademark.
Yeah.
With Tyler Perry making cameos in other directors' films. It's as though people know when they're making a movie, oh, do you want like
one amazing scene?
Do you want one amazing scene? Put Tyler Perry in one scene to either be an extremely evil person or a very officious and cutting person. And man, he knocks it out of the park every time. And he always surprises you because he just pops into the scene. And you're like, hey, Tyler Perry.
What? Just a little Tyler Perry. It's like Margie's chili powder. You just like toss it in there and it's, you know.
This film has no reason to exist.
It's kind of a dad movie.
I'm watching. Oh, it's absolutely a dad movie. I'm watching, but it's also a mom movie too, because Angelina Jolie is the action hero.
Yes.
In this film.
But it's the kind of movie where you could, if you had made this movie 40, 30 years ago, right, you could have plugged in Stallone or Schwarzenegger or Bruce Willis
For sure.
Like whatever. It's, but she is, her being in it does, I think, give it a certain frisson.
I find her all the time to be nothing less than a movie star who sells you anything because she's such a movie star. You take her at face value when she walks in and says, here I am, and this is what I do in the film, and you're going to come with me, and I'm magnetic, and you won't be able to stop looking at me because I've got that thing that movie stars have that sad people like you watching the movie do not have. I'm Angelina Jolie. Thank you. Good night.
Yes. Like, I will say not 100% of the time with her, but most of the time,
well, no one bats a thousand.
Sure. No, of course not.
But in general, that is her. Do we have movie stars anymore?
A handful.
She is still one.
Yes.
And so I watched this film thinking, what is this film about other than what it's about? And about every 10 minutes, I think, it's not about anything other than what it's about. It's about chasing,
running and
fighting,
running, and
running. Running, shooting, fighting,
smoke,
screaming, fires, shooting, death, tricking people. It's all of those things.
I mean, yeah, yes. But I think, you know, look, she gets this redemption arc, which, you know, and I think that I what I said before about you could plug a man into this movie, I wonder if a male action hero's redemption would be tied into the notion of the safeguarding of children, or if that's something that most movies have decided is a woman thing.
Wrath of Man. We just reviewed it.
Right, but that was his own adult son.
Yes.
This is about, she's haunted by not being able to save these young children, and now this other young child pops into her life, and she has the chance to.
Speaking of the young child, Finn Little, the kid.
He's really good.
First of all, he looks like he could be her son. He's got Angelina Jolie's lips, and he cries on cue.
He's called upon to do it
in
a lot,
way, and I guess a lot of people can cry on cue, but this kid delivers the fear and the anxiety of, you know, hit my mother's dead, my father just was murdered in front of me, and now
the guys who killed him are out to get me.
They want to kill me now. This kid, he's something.
I was also impressed with how creepy the hitmen are because they're so businesslike.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are not, like evil and rubbing their hands together and twirling their mustaches.
They're just like, we've got to kill five people before we clock out today.
Exactly. But like they're really good at their job and they're really efficient at their job, and their job just happens to be murdering people.
Right.
And so because they're so emotionally disconnected from it, it's like, yeah I got to get that Peterson report in, you know, but it's off-putting and it's really effective.
I really enjoyed this.
Yeah.
Again, it's about nothing.
It is a solid genre entry.
Yeah, it's that's the word. It's solid.
Yeah.
Everybody's given what they're supposed to give.
Right.
Everybody is appealing. No matter if they're good people, bad people, people in fear. You've got surprising stuff that happens. I'm not gonna tell you what it is. Really satisfying comeuppances. And it's on HBO Max. I had a really good time watching this movie that's not really about anything other than what it's about.
We have a recurring joke on Breakfast All Day where Matt will say about a movie that it does what it says on the box.
Yeah.
And I said, this does what it says on the box. He says, no, it doesn't, because this is a terrible title. It's a little too grand for the kind of, like, you know, action movie that it is, I think. It's a little too, ooh, let's be poetic. I mean, I know it's based on a book.
I don't know. I'm going to give it the title.
Okay.
The title, it can keep the title.
Okay.
I've decided.
Dave says so.
I also watched Woman in the Window.
Ooh. Which it was already an old noir title, but, you know, no one remembers anything.
And it was also a novel.
Yes.
And we'll get to that in a little bit. Because the novel
has its own backstory.
All right. So this is a movie from Joe Wright.
Mm-hmm. Adapted by Tracy Letts.
Yeah. Screenplay by Tracy Letts, based on the novel by A.J. Finn. Again, more on that in a moment. So, Amy Adams is a child psychologist who lives in a
breathtaking,
so amazing Upper West Side brownstone, the kind that's like 100 years old, and, you know, everything's dark wood, and it's just, you know, perfectly full of character and a little bit of decay, and it's like you expect the Royal Tenenbaums to live there.
Outside of the movies, I think only like tech billionaires live in those now. But sure, we'll just assume that this is a real thing.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Oh, the Royal Tenenbaums house is up for sale.
Yeah, and it's selling for like $20 million something crazy like that. And she is dealing with a separation from her husband and daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And she has developed...
Husband played by Anthony Mackie.
Anthony Mackie. Who you at first only see... You only hear him on the phone at first.
Yeah.
You see him later. She is dealing with agoraphobia. And she will not leave her home. And very much like Jimmy Stewart in Rear Window, which... we see a clip of at the very beginning of the film.
In case you weren't already making that connection.
Just in case you weren't getting it, we see a clip from Rear Window. She begins spying on all her neighbors.
Yes.
With binoculars and a camera, exactly like Jimmy Stewart in Rear Window.
She's also on a lot of meds that you're not supposed to drink with, but she drinks with them.
Her psychiatrist makes house calls.
Mm-hmm.
Played by Tracy Letts.
Yes.
And they're trying to adjust her medication. She takes a whole bunch of different things. She drinks a lot of wine with these medications, which doesn't help.
Because doctors are the worst patients. She's like, oh, well, they always tell you that.
Right. There's this one scene where it might be Julianne Moore who says to her, you know, you're not supposed to drink with those. And my first response in my head was,
they work faster. Valley of the Dolls.
Because I'm married to you.
Yes.
All right. new people move in. Gary Oldman and Julianne Moore and their son, played by a young actor named Fred Hechinger. I don't know how you say his last name.
No idea.
22 playing 15.
Yes.
Yeah.
As you do.
So, Julianne Moore, well, first of all, the kid, the 15-year-old kid, knocks on the door to bring a...
Lavender candle.
A lavender candle. We just moved in. We wanted to give you a little gift. Then Julianne Moore comes knocking on the door. And she hangs out with Amy Adams for a while. And then we meet Amy Adams's tenant.
Yes.
Played by Wyatt Russell. He lives in the basement. He's a handyman.
So you have two of the three stars of the Falcon and the Winter Soldier in this movie.
And then we see Julianne Moore stabbed to death?
Question mark?
Yeah.
By Gary Oldman?
And then when Amy Adams calls the cops, they come over, and one of them is played by Brian Tyree Henry.
Yes.
And the other is my very favorite no-nonsense coded lesbian detective of the past year in cinema.
The queen of not having it.
And they get Gary Oldman over, and they get the kid over, and then they get Gary Oldman's wife over, Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yes.
And Amy Adams says, wait a second, you're not her. And Jennifer Jason Leigh says, I am her. And the no-nonsense coded lesbian detective says, it's her. I was like, you go, coded lesbian detective. And then things start to unravel.
Yeah.
So, is there really a murder? Is Amy Adams hallucinating? Is there a cover-up happening? What is the tenant doing downstairs? Where is Julianne Moore? Who is Julianne Moore?
Was Julianne Moore.
Yeah. And what's going on with the separated husband, yeah, Anthony Mackie?
How many levels of unreliable is this narrator anyway?
All the levels.
Yeah.
Not only the narrator, but all the other people in the movie. There is no sturdy ground happening in this film. And as it slowly mopes its way toward a conclusion and then careens wildly out of control.
Oh, man.
With actual cartoon blood that splatters the screen, which is my favorite moment.
You know, they reshot the ending because apparently when they had the big explainy reveal, like, audiences didn't get it. And so they had to, like...
What's there to get?
Well, apparently it required more spelling out or something.
That's hilarious. Okay. This film is absolute trash.
Yes.
And I had such a wonderful time watching it because it is like dimly lit and the apartment, the house is great. And Amy Adams is super committed to this, you know, yet another entry in the history of Hollywood playing fast and loose with mental health challenges.
Well, sure. She's acting the crap out of it. But
she really is.
I think if you drink when Amy Adams drinks in this movie, but please don't mix it with your meds, then that would make it more enjoyable.
I sat on the couch. It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
I sat on the couch and I had some snacks and I was super happy. It is a bad film. Let's just say this.
Yes.
It is a bad film.
And yet,
thoroughly enjoyable.
Well, it is. I mean, I was very bored by much of it.
You were bored?
I was.
Oh, I was never
because
bored.
Because there's that thing in a movie where it's like, okay, at some point you're going to explain all this because everything seems nutty. And because I don't particularly care, I'm just going to tune out until the last 10 minutes when you do explain everything. So what's interesting about this movie is that it is, this movie could not be more pedigreed.
Oh yeah, it's got A-lister, A-lister,
so
A-lister.
So many Oscar winners. You've got Bruno, what's it, Duhamel shooting it.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Tracy Letts writing the screenplay and acting in it. You've got Joe Wright. And it's like the cast is lousy with Oscar winners and nominees and you know, sort of leading lights of the current cinema.
Bruno Delbonnel.
Delbonnel, thank you. And it's just so cheesy and dumb. And it keeps reminding you of better movies that it wants to be like. Not only do you open with a shot of Rear Window, but then later, after it's revealed that, you know, was Julianne Moore murdered? Did she ever exist? What's going on? Then we get a clip from Laura. It's like, I get it.
Laura, you get Rear Window, like you said. There's a Vertigo vibe quite often. There's one shot that's super Vertigo-like.
Yeah.
Roman Polanski's The Tenant.
Mm-hmm.
So many films from the past that, you know, are, you know, good.
Would be a better watch than this one.
Well, I mean, you know, most things would be a better watch than this.
It's that joke. You know, it's a musical that you leave humming the tunes from other musicals.
It's getting reviews that are just so vicious.
Well, the pedigree acts against it.
The reviews are funny. The movie's funny. It's an absolute mess. The thing that happens at the end is just, it's bonkers. So you get, someone literally explains every single thing that happened and why.
Yeah.
At the end. Get some candy. If you see this in a movie theater or at home, make sure you have all the popcorn, all the candy, all the pizza.
Now that you
all the alcohol.
If you and your friends are vaxxed, you know, like, and you've been wanting a whiny night at the movies, this could be the way to go, I suppose.
It's supremely silly. Total enjoyment.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm glad you had fun.
We have a letter.
Yes. And your computer restarted.
My computer restarted. Because
you hacked it.
I am technology. Sandra from Vancouver.
Mm.
Couldn't help but drop a line in defense of the Oscar winning My Octopus Teacher.
We did ask for feedback from people who liked it.
As I finally got around to watching it. Unfortunately, it would be better served up at breakfast all day. And not your podcast, but as letters aren't dealt with there, I have to give my 2 cents worth here. Sorry.
Fair enough.
I do think you, Alonzo, and Dave were more forgiving in terms of what you didn't like, as it was Christy who really dragged it.
Yes.
So feel free to pass these thoughts on to her.
Oh, okay.
After all, y'all invited us to weigh in on what maybe you guys were missing here.
We did.
I can't say this film is a masterpiece. Or deserved its Oscar, but I did find beauty in its idea. I don't begrudge you. Craig Foster is definitely annoying, particularly in the first part of the film. However, it is his story and where he ends it. I found poignant and hopeful. Maybe it's because my best friend and I grew up here in Vancouver, so our relationship with the ocean has always been special. To this day, we go swimming in the ocean as much as possible. So we were moved by his discoveries. He went in this cold water, which he was trained to do, and gradually learned to hold his breath for apparently up to 6 minutes.
Oof.
That's bonkers. I think the rawness of just being in the underwater world with nothing but flippers and a snorkel awed us because it has never been easy.
Mm.
The fact that he continues ocean swimming to this day despite the perils and potential sadness the stories beneath tell, I think showed him the worlds we explore are bigger than us. He's passing this to his son and is actively trying to help oceans. It's all subjective, and one can surely make an argument in favor of a more narcissistic take. I just don't know if I can really denigrate a film for doing what it has literally set out to do. I guess I dismissed what was annoying about him and took away from it why I love the ocean. I still say it is impressive he did this without fancy Jacques Cousteau equipment. yet showed us something that we haven't seen. Perhaps in the world of documentary subjects, which have more social commentary and importance, this seems to pale in comparison, but I think that's the point. There is beauty in simplicity, and maybe sometimes that is enough.
That is perfectly fair.
I think that is, yes, and if you said that to me before I watched it, I would be like, oh yeah.
I'm still mad about Collective, but you're right. there is a lot to like.
I think, you know, taking issue with the formal elements of a documentary is one thing, which is what I was kind of doing. Mm-hmm. Taking issue is the wrong thing. Not being super bowled over by.
Sure.
Yeah. But it looked beautiful, like I said, and, you know, he does do good things.
Yeah. And believe me, I never want to fall into the trap that the Academy was so infamous for such a long time, where they would judge movies based on what they were about versus how they were made. So, you know, you would hear these stories about the screening, the back when it was like a committee that picked all these, I'm not sure how it works now, but like they would get something like Paris is Burning or Hoop Dreams, and the consensus of the room was like, well, I mean, drag balls and basketball players, like, bring on another movie about famine, please. You know, right. It's got to be serious.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the case.
Yeah.
Seemingly. These innovative documentaries were just not getting attention from the Academy. So, yeah, I don't hate my activist teacher. I just, you know, I still think it's sort of like the least of the bunch.
Yeah. Yeah. It has qualities in its favor, but, you know,
sweet. It is moving.
In a competition, you know, it's a whole other story.
And for the record, I don't think he was stalking the octopus. And I don't think he was a narcissist.
You know. I think he centers himself a little more than he needs to.
Oh, sure.
But,
doesn't everyone?
I suppose.
Don't you, don't me.
Yes. Speaking of centering ourselves.
Yes, we.
We have a Patreon. patreon.com/linoleummap for more of us. For as little as a dollar a month, you can get extra content that includes a daily recommendations of things to check out or look at or listen to or eat.
Yep.
We've got...
Go faster?
Sure.
LKTV, a podcast about television.
We've already skipped one. Linoleum Knife presents More Linoleum Knife.
Linoleum Knife presents More Linoleum Knife, where we talk about a movie that's old.
Yeah.
Linoleum Knife and Fork, where we talk about mostly cake. Seems like it's a lot of cake.
And lentils.
And
a lot
cake
of lentils.
And lentils, yes, but never lentil cakes.
No.
And then Linoleum Nights, where just this past week we...
Talked about our least favorite songs ever.
Talked about our least favorite songs in the world. So you get all kinds of things.
Fun. We just had our monthly club meeting. We all gathered around the Netflix box and watched Julie and Julia.
Speaking of Amy Adams.
Yep.
And the reason we did that, well, long story.
A Fork listener was convinced for some reason that we had issues with that movie. And so we wanted to take another look at it and see if, did we? We don't remember.
10 years down the road, I like it a lot more than I did back then.
I feel kinder about it now as well. Yeah. For sure. So, thanks for listening. Please check out my other podcasts, Breakfast All Day, A Film and a Movie, the untitled If You Dre and Alonzo Project, which we will have a title soon. We've got it down to 4 finalists.
Oh, you hadn't picked one yet?
Nope.
Oh.
That was the thing that was going on during X Fun Drive.
This is like a never-ending saga.
Oh, it'll be over before you know it. And, you know, Mondays on Deck the Hallmark this week, it was great. They let me pick the movie because it was my birthday this week. And we watched 1977's The Gathering, which is one of my favorite made-for-TV Christmas movies. And so that was a delight to revisit. You can also catch me this week on the Christmas Clatter podcast. They did their... it's like Screen Fights, but it's about Christmas movies, and I'm forgetting what they call it, but it was a lot of fun, and I got to be one of the judges, and had a lot of interesting ideas about, like, you know, Christmas movies that don't exist but should. Also, check out our friends at the internet, on the internet. See what Bibbs and Whitney are up to over at secretly. God.
What?
See what Bibbs and Whitney are up to over at Critically Acclaimed, their network of amazing shows. Check out the Schmoes Know. Listen to Dennis, Anyone with Dennis Hensley, the Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, the Workroom, Big Fat Gay Podcast, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. We will read it on the air. You can also leave positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Stitcher Radio and Spotify and CastBox and Podbean and TheLounge.com. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments. Thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. You can check him out at Bandcamp, BLEU, and you can follow us on the social media at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Next time, we have a lot to catch up on, and we hope to actually do it.
It will be many films.
Yes. Until then.
Goodbye.
Oh, wait.
Wait a minute. We're not done. Not goodbye. Goodbye is not now. Goodbye is soon. We talked all about The Woman in the Window, and then we forgot to talk about the novel.
Yeah. We kept teasing it.
Yeah. All right. So here's what happened. This book came out in 2018 by someone named A.J. Finn.
Yes.
Instant New York Times bestseller. And then someone in the New York Times, Alexandra Alter, wrote that the book was, this is the quote, strikingly similar to an earlier novel called Saving April by Sarah Denzel, with, quote, parallels that are numerous and detailed.
Oh, dear.
But the publisher of Woman in the Window said, no, this book was already in process when that came out.
Huh.
There's more.
Oh.
A.J. Finn, the author of The Woman in the Window, is a man named Daniel Mallory. Mm-hmm. He writes under the name A.J. Finn.
Right.
So then the book comes out in 2018. They make the movie in 2019.
Right.
They plan to release it in 2020.
Yeah.
COVID happens.
Yes.
They wind up releasing it now, in 2021.
Also, it was like a Fox movie.
Sure.
And then Disney gets it.
Got
and
it.
Then, you know.
Not important.
It plays into it.
The delay. It plays into the delay, but that's not what we're talking about.
Okay.
Right now. What we're talking about right now is an article in The New Yorker in 2019 that basically kind of told the truth about A.J. Finn, that in his, you know, personal history that he told people, he sort of was a compulsive liar.
Yo.
Like, he made up a bunch of stuff. Like, said he had a doctorate, said he had cancer and a brain tumor and he got better, said his mom was dead, said his brother was dead. None of them are dead. And that the 1995 movie Copycat was also figured into stuff that, like, he wrote. And so this guy's a trip. And it just adds that extra layer of
cursed object
of reliability in terms of, well, where did this book come from? Who are you? Are you the novelist about a person who is an unreliable narrator, also an unreliable narrator?
Did Julianne Moore write this novel?
About literally everything? It's fascinating.
Oy.
So I don't know where he is now, what he's doing, if he's still going to write another novel, but you know what? James Fry can come out of his situation and stay successful, then so can this dude.
There's a woman I follow on Twitter who said, like, my favorite genre of movie is woman literally existing. It's like the girl on the train and the woman in the window.
All right, that's all. I just thought it was a funny little weird, you know,
coda
to the story. Like, oh, the movie's bad and the book is
quite possibly plagiarism.
The book might not be all, you know, everything it's supposed to be. And then, like, the guy who wrote the book is, we don't know.
Yikes. All right.
I haven't read this New Yorker article I probably never will.
Just the juicy tidbits.
Just the juicy stuff, yeah.
All right, for real this time.
Yeah. Goodbye.